Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, October 7th, 2016. Sudanese doctors are on a nationwide strike over poor working conditions.
We have hospitals that don't have available supply of oxygen, emergency and life-saving drugs, and even sometimes beds are not available. So we are striking to provide these basic services.
And Ugandans who fled from Juba in July are planning to go back.
I heard that the Nimre Road, they are putting there to work the security. In Juba also, I'm trying to talk to my friends, they are saying that they're okay, nothing. And now it's okay. This Uganda is very hard. Unless when you have worked and you get your own money and you come and make your own business.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudanese doctors began a nationwide strike yesterday that affects more than 45 hospitals. The doctors are demanding new hospital equipment and job security. The doctors claim the Sudan government is spending more than 65% of the country's overall budget on military hardware. Dr. Mohamed Naji is a member of the Sudanese Doctors Union. Dr. Naji says the Sudanese health system has collapsed.
We have hospitals that cannot provide its patients with even the essentials of the medical service. We have hospitals that don't have available supply of oxygen, emergency and life-saving drugs, and even sometimes beds are not available. So we are striking to provide these basic services for our patients.
Naji says doctors in Sudan work in miserable conditions. He says it is not uncommon for outraged patients or their relatives to assault doctors over the poor health services provided in the country's hospitals.
We are asking for a law that can protect us in doing our job as we can do it. Also, these assaults that have increased recently, mainly they are due to the lack of these basic medical services. The people think that it is the responsibility of the doctor to provide them with the basic services.
Sudan's Minister of Health, Bedri Idris Abogarda, charges that the country's doctors are merely politicizing the situation and want to embarrass the government at a time when it is engaging in a national dialogue with the opposition to determine the country's future. Sudan's Information Minister Ahmed Bilal says the government will implement the demands of the doctors by the end of this week. Bilal says doctors have the right to strike, but they should not neglect patients who need emergency health care.
We admit that our hospitals need some sort of attention by the government, and this has been taken in consideration. And now this strike is coming to an end. What people say, it's not my opinion, but people say that these are political agenda by some people to do this and accelerate it because we are going to the end of the national dialogue on the 10th of this month.
Bilal adds that the government has allocated 48% of its budget to public services, a number that could not be verified by any government entity.
Many people say that this money has been spent for the security. And now the budget, we are discussing the budget. It is only 18% is going for the security. 48% is going for social affairs. Say 20% is going for the development. This is not true. This is absolutely not true. And what we are doing now in the sector of health, I think for myself, it's a revolution.
Bilal says all Sudanese hospitals will soon be rehabilitated, but he did not say exactly when that would happen. He also says 800 new hospitals will be built between 2017 and 2018. That story was prepared by VOA fellow Nadia Taha. 17 hospitals in the capital have been affected by the strike. Mariam Sadiq Al-Mahdi is a pediatrician in Khartoum and the first woman vice president of the main opposition National Umma Party. Mariam tells VOA's James Batty that doctors had no choice but to strike, given that they had been complaining for some time about the poor working conditions.
The doctors have convened 3 days ago on the 3rd of October and called the State Ministry of Health for certain demands, basically three basic demands: that they improve the environment of work, that they provide a training for the doctors, and that they provide the basic needs for patients, especially in the ERs, in the emergency rooms. And they have given the State Ministry of Health 48 hours to respond positively to their demand, or they will go in a strike until their demands are met, because they have been facing the violence of the needy patients who come to the emergency seeking help for very acute cases like breathlessness, problem with breathing, bleeding, or such things. They cannot provide for them anything, because in many emergency rooms, there is no even oxygen cylinder. So today, which is the day of the deadline of the warning given by the doctors, they went in strike. They have stopped working in court cases and in the inpatient department, but they kept on, of course, seeing needy people in the emergency room.
What are the main reasons that the doctors are protesting for? What are their concerns?
Their concerns are basically that they don't have any ability to provide the minimum proper medical assistance to patients. They have a very poor work environment. They don't have any protection. The salaries are very poor. They get something like less than $200 per month for intern doctors, and it doesn't exceed double that even for the specialized ones. And they don't get any training in a fixed way. It is very much limited to the money abilities and so on. So there is no proper training given to these doctors. Now, above that, there is no legal protection for them against the violence of people.
What do you say to people who say, well, you are the doctors, your job is to treat us, to make us well? If you don't treat us, then you are not doing your professional duty.
True. This demand has been adamantly and persistently presented by the doctors. The health sector is totally abandoned, is totally neglected. So the doctors have been insisting on not going into this step because, as you said, they don't want to leave the patients not protected by not providing them any help. But it is actually now they can't totally do anything, and the people is taking their rightful anger of not finding the proper medical help at the doctors themselves. They are hitting them. They are smashing the emergency rooms, and it has now reached the point of explosion. That's why it is about time, actually, for the doctors to be truthful to themselves, to be ethical to their patients, is to stop, because they are there in a place called the hospital with no provision to give any help or to cure any disease.
Has there been any response from the Sudanese government to the doctors' request or demands?
First of all, as I said, the state minister, who is the one who has been now the icon of confrontation with his colleagues, doctors, for the last several years. He has been in full protection from any questioning. He came in the out yesterday. He said there is no problem. There is no need for any changes. These doctors are only politicized, exploited people who want to embarrass the government in this very critical time where people are going to the national dialogue, or they are calling for conclusion of national dialogue and such things.
Mariam Al-Sadiq Al-Mahdi is the vice president of the main opposition National Umma Party. She was speaking with VOA's James Batty from the capital, Khartoum. Meanwhile, in Juba, the government and aid agencies say the cholera outbreak that began in July in Juba has spread to five other states. Ministry of Health officials say the outbreak has killed at least 37 people, and there are nearly 3,000 confirmed cases so far. International aid agencies blame the spread of the outbreak on the recent flare-up of violence in Juba, which left many people with inadequate sanitation facilities. Waki Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
This year's cholera outbreak is the third in a row since South Sudan gained independence 5 years ago. Though fewer people have died of cholera this year compared to last year, there have been more cases of people treated with the disease this year. Ministry of Health officials registered a little over 1,800 cases of cholera last year. Dr. John Rumuno represents the South Sudan government in the National Cholera Task Force, which brings together 8 workers and health ministry officials. He says despite the huge number of cases this year, recent reports indicate the epidemic is subsiding.
The cases are going down. As of today,
the cases are going down. As of today, there is only one case at Juba Treatment Center. And the efforts have been jointly undertaken between the Ministry of Health and its partners. The overall coordination of the response at the national level is coordinated, of course, by the National Cholera Task Force to review outbreaks and progress of implementation activities.
Rumuno, who also serves as the Director General for Preventive Health Services at the National Health Ministry, says at the onset of the outbreak, Juba Teaching Hospital's Cholera Treatment Center was handling at least 70 new cases per day. Last year's outbreak was mainly confined to Juba and a few parts of Jonglei State. This year, the outbreak started in the capital and quickly spread to other 5 states, the newly created Terkeka, Eastern Lakes, Imatong, Western Biei, and Jonglei. Rumuno says many cholera cases have been registered at internally displaced persons camps and surrounding communities. Jubek State has registered the highest number of cases with nearly 1,900, followed by Eastern Lakes State with 317. Government and 8 agency officials blame July's deadly fighting in Juba for the spike in this year's cholera outbreak. They say the conflict forced many people to flee their homes, exposing them to many risks.
The main responses we have identified include drinking untreated raw water from the river or shallow wells, poor hygiene behavior, as well as poor latrine use, and in some occasions, eating from unregulated food vending outlets.
Rumuno says an intensified coordinated effort by government and WHO, UNICEF, among other 8 agencies, such as weekly cholera task force meetings, have helped contain the outbreak. He also says a stepped-up awareness campaign that includes daily house-to-house visits by health workers talking about the importance of hand-washing and general cleanliness have prevented the spread of the epidemic. Rumuno warns that unless the public heeds that advice, it's too early to say the epidemic is winding down.
As long as the risk factors are still there, and as we still see cases, we cannot say that it's over now.
A report released by the National Health Ministry yesterday says officials are also investigating suspected cholera cases in Ayok County, Western Biei State, and Lier in Southern Leech State. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Nairobi.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Ugandans who fled Juba recently say they want to come back when calm is restored to the capital. We'll have that story when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today
What do you most like to talk about?
What we talk about most is maybe the nation's economy, the state of the nation. And it's not a new thing. Everyone knows the economy of the nation is in recession. So that's what we keep talking about, the way to handle things, the possible solutions.
Developmental issue, actually, because I realize that many a times we neglect issues that will at least develop our community. So being that I have myself in that community, wherever I get myself, I'll make sure that we discuss developmental issues.
Honestly, I much like to talk about women being progressive and being innovative and having something to do for themselves.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Some Ugandans who fled Juba during the deadly fighting in July say they will return to South Sudan when the country's leaders restore peace. Ugandans who have lived and worked in South Sudan for years say it is difficult to cope up with life back home. Mungume Devs Rakarinj has more for VOA from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
...34-year-old boda boda driver Abdara Mhereza calls on passengers to hop on his motorbike at Nakasero Market, one of the busiest in Uganda's capital, Kampala. It is 1 p.m. and Mhereza says he has only transported two passengers since morning. He says he has made only 5,000 Ugandan shillings, or about $1.50 for the day. He says back in Juba he would have made double that amount.
The saving of Juba was good, because the day you can save £100. But the situation is that the dollar was going what? Up. But the problem of Uganda, you can get you can save 5,000, 7,000 and something.
For the 2 years he spent in Juba, Mhereza says he was able to buy a plot of land and take care of his five children. Since returning to Uganda, Mhereza says he's only able to pay school fees for two of his children. Mhereza is among hundreds of Ugandans who either fled the South Sudanese capital or were evacuated by the Ugandan army when fighting broke out between the South Sudan army and forces loyal to former first vice president Riek Machar in July. Mhereza says the Ugandan army allowed him and other Ugandans to carry their most valuable items, such as his motorbike. 30-year-old Justin Msabimana worked as a marketing and sales executive for an insurance company in Juba. Like Mhereza, she says she was able to achieve a lot in the 3 years she lived and worked in Juba. At Kampala's Namayaba bus terminal, she has been able to set up a grocery store from the savings she earned in Juba. She says living in South Sudan taught her many things.
Being with people, different people, because South Sudan, it is a country that has a variety of many people. Let's say we had Eritreans, we had Ethiopians, there are many things, and those people are good in business, so I was able to learn business skills from them. When I get my business skills, the ones I learned from South Sudan, how to live a hard life, because that country, it was really hard life, I know I'll make it here in Uganda.
Msabimana says she does not plan to return to Juba because of security concerns. 25-year-old businesswoman Sarah Nabunju used to sell fresh food in Juba's Nyakron market before she fled the country. Nabunju says she used to make 700 South Sudanese pounds, or which is equal to $10 every day. She says she is planning a trip to Juba.
I have heard that the Nimre Road, they have put the artwork, the security. In Juba also, I'm trying to talk to my friends, they are saying that they're okay. Nothing. I know it's okay. This Uganda is very hard. Unless when you have worked and you get your own money and you come and make your own business, that's why you'll survive here in Uganda.
There are thousands of Ugandans and foreigners from other neighboring countries who have worked for years in South Sudan in both formal and informal sectors. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
From Uganda, we move to Ghana, where the government has ordered a university in Accra to take down a new statue of Mahatma Gandhi following a petition from professors arguing the statue is inappropriate in light of derogatory comments Gandhi made about Africans. For VOA News, Francisca Kakra Farson talked to university students about the controversy.
Indian President Pranab Mukherjee presented the statue to the University of Ghana during his visit there in June. some professors and students began a campaign to get the statue removed. They tweeted under the hashtag Gandhi Must Fall and gathered over 1,000 signatures for their petition to the university leadership. Eugene Salom Owusu is a linguistics and sociology student.
Gandhi for me didn't do anything for Investor Ghana, so why should we come here and erect a statue in his honor? We have people like Nkrumah, J.B. Dankwa who built this university, but there are no statues in their honor. So I think they should rather put their statues there in lieu of expat or a foreigner.
Mahatma Gandhi led the independence movement in India. He died in 1948. He's best known for pioneering the use of nonviolent resistance, influencing movements through the world, like the fight to end apartheid in South Africa. But professors say Gandhi also made racist comments. Gandhi is quoted as having used the term kafirs, a derogatory slur for black Africans. At the university, vandals have removed Gandhi's trademark round-framed spectacles from the statue. But when VOA visited the campus, many students said they think the statue should stay. Petras Ali is a physics student.
I like Mahatma Gandhi, and one of his favorite quotes is about the freedom of a country depends on how its animals are treated. So I like him a lot, and I don't know why students are saying we should remove.
Some students and staff say removing the statue makes Ghana look bad. Bright Amezu works at the university's School of Graduate Studies.
I mean, it's not going to change anything about our lives as Ghanaians or as people on University of Ghana campus, but, I mean, it just paints a very bad impression about us in a way, I mean, internationally.
Ghana's Foreign Affairs Ministry said in a press statement the statue will be relocated to avoid a diplomatic row with India. Its new location has not been announced. The ministry described the controversy as an attack on an Indian national hero and called on Ghanaians to be careful in their comments and reactions. Francisca Kakra-Forson for VOA News, Accra.
We turn to Zambia now, where the government has continued to crack down on the opposition. Two top opposition leaders were arrested this week and charged with sedition. Anita Powell files from Johannesburg on the concerns that the continued political instability will deter investors, which would be bad news for the already struggling Zambian economy.
Everything happened so fast. From nowhere, I was grabbed in my jeans, somebody held my shirt, and they were, you know, advising each other, let's pull her inside where there's no one, there's too much attention outside here.
That's Lisa Kasomba, owner of Zambia's Kumboni Radio. She spoke to VOA from her home where she is on bed rest after Wednesday's confrontation with Lusaka police outside her office.
I screamed for help. They kicked my leg as I fell down. They started dragging me by my hair, trying to pull me in. Started kicking me. They started, you know, beating me up. And they were just doing that in my ribs. And this police officer grabbed my bra to the extent that it didn't cut. My breasts were so painful as he pulled me. And I caught his hand and bit him.
Authorities suspended operations at Kasomba Station in April during the tense run-up to an August presidential poll for unspecified allegations of unprofessional conduct. Kasomba had gone to her station on Wednesday after authorities informed her she had permission to reopen. Police have now charged her with assaulting an officer, which she denies, though she says she defended herself. Also this week, police arrested Zambia's top opposition leaders and charged them with sedition over their claims that August presidential poll, won by President Edgar Lungu, was unfair. Opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema and his deputy, Jeffrey Mwamba, were released on bail. Dozens of their supporters were also arrested. In a statement, Hichilema denied the charges, describing them as laughable, utter nonsense, stupid. Analyst Impo Motsamai of the Pretoria-based Institute for Security Studies says this sort of turmoil is new for Zambia, a nation that has a long history of peaceful transfers of power and multi-party democracy.
It's a very important development here in Zambia, and it is widely some in some circles for the simple reason that it can create an impression that there is kind of a political witch hunting on the part of the president in dealing with somebody who then challenged his legitimacy.
VOA News tried to reach the nation's information minister, but he did not answer repeated calls seeking comment. Chilu Fiatayali, founder of the new Movement for Economic Development and Equity, told VOA he doesn't think Zambia is in a crisis yet, but says he is concerned about the implications of recent events.
There is no investor who wants to invest in a country that is not stable. There is no investor who is looking to invest in a country that does not respect human rights. There is no investor that is looking at investing in a country where the opposition are not given that freedom of expression, freedom of movement.
Kasomba says her station will remain closed until she is well enough to collect her confiscated transmitter. She says the scariest thing about her assault was not its suddenness or its brutality. What scared her the most, she said, was that she yelled for help and saw confused faces on the many people around her. She thinks they were asking themselves, who do we call for help when the people who would help are the ones doing this? Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. Sudanese doctors across the country walked off the job yesterday. They're demanding aging hospital equipment be replaced and other improvements at more than 40 hospitals. The doctors charge the government spends more than 65% of the country's annual budget on security. Dr. Mohamed Naji with the Sudanese Doctors Union says the Sudanese health system has collapsed. He describes working conditions for doctors as miserable. Dr. Naji says it's not unusual for frustrated patients or relatives of patients to assault doctors in a hospital over poor health services. Sudan's Minister of Health, Dr. Bahar Fedris Abu Garda, claims the country's doctors are politicizing the situation and only want to embarrass the government at a time when it's engaged in a national dialogue with the opposition to determine the country's future. Sudan's Information Minister says the government will implement the demands of the doctors by the end of this week. Government and aid agency health officials in South Sudan say the cholera outbreak that began in July has spread to six states. Officials say the outbreak has killed at least 37 people. There are more than 2,500 confirmed cases so far. The agencies blame the outbreak on the recent fighting in Juba, which forced many people to flee their homes with no adequate sanitation facilities. It's the third straight cholera outbreak in South Sudan since it gained its independence 5 years ago. Though fewer people have died from cholera this year compared to last year, there are far more cases reported this year. Health officials registered a little over 1,800 cases of cholera last year. Dr. John Rumunu, who is with the National Cholera Task Force, says despite the huge number of cases this year, recent reports indicate that the epidemic is subsiding. Dr. Rumunu says there is now only one case at the Juba Treatment Center. And finally, some Ugandans who fled Juba during the fighting in July say they will return to South Sudan when the country's leaders restore peace. Ugandans who have lived and worked in South Sudan for years say it's difficult to cope with life back home. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Joe Gero by the Freedom Boys.
You're our people. Just listen to this drum and take the meaning. We are the boys of the land. Take the better choice for your freedom. This is the last chance.
Nina Fakat, Apuana Tanina Alcatulu, Meteriga Tanzulu, Jurafta Junub, Malabedo, the innocent people. Oh, Alcatulu, Meteriga Tanzulu, Jurubi, oh, Samana Kanita Bia Suma Pap, the better la Pia, Amulu Poro, Pisonia, Ai, Junubi, Ai, get it, Tanin Shilu. Kalu fijuwa suwa jada fijuwa bahario obita ni lizem bikilim gar sudan bikilim.
We have been listening to Freedom Boys with the song Jogero. I am John Tanza in Washington. Have a peaceful weekend, and please join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Ovita ni lisa tergede na keni, mau monu mo sei sei le yakwana.